Hey everybody, and welcome to iFreaks episode 2. This week on our panel we have Ben Sherman.
Hello from Houston.
We also have Rod Schmidt.
Hello from Salt Lake City.
And I'm Charles Maxwood from devchat.tv. And this week we're going to be talking about memory management in iOS.
Scary.
Yeah. So I understand that it's a lot easier now because you just turn on the automatic reference counter and it takes care of it.
Yeah, for the most part, a lot of the stuff you needed to know in the past is handled for you, but that doesn't really obviate the need to know. You still need to know how it works.
Yeah, you may still run into open source code that's using the old way, or you got to understand bridging if you're using Core Foundation, etc.
Yeah, the other thing I understand about automatic reference counting is that it doesn't just magically do, you know, the releases and stuff. It actually just, when you compile it, inserts them into your code.
Right. I mean, this is a fundamental difference between reference counting and garbage collection. And garbage collection is certainly handier from a development perspective. You don't really have to think about it too much. You just stop pointing to objects and they'll get collected later on. Unfortunately, it has some unpredictable performance implications, especially on an embedded device. And so Apple has chosen to go to completely deprecate garbage collection. And it was never possible to do that on the iPhone. So you'd have to manage your own memory and do reference counting. And so that means when you create an object, you own a reference to it, and then you need to call release later on. And if you didn't create the object, but somebody else, say you retrieve this object via method call or something else, and you wanted it to stick around for the lifecycle of your object, you would have to call retain on it. And of course, anything that you retain, you would also have to release. So it was just kind of it was a little bit scary for me first coming into Objective-C, just because I hadn't done C in a long time. And, you know, you have the same problem with C where you malloc and you free memory, right? So anyway, it turned out to not be that big of a deal, honestly. Just once you follow the rules, it just becomes second nature.
Yeah. So let me back up just a little bit and explain what we're talking about here. So garbage collection, basically what happens is you tell the, well, through the programming language, you tell the operating system to allocate a certain amount of memory for your object. And then when you're done and the object goes out of scope, and in most cases, this is automatic with the higher level languages. But anyway, when the object goes out of scope, then there's a process or a thread that comes through and cleans up anything that is out of scope and therefore isn't being used anymore. The problem is that the garbage collection algorithms aren't always the most efficient, and sometimes there are other side effects to the way that they work. With reference counting, what happens is when you call retain in iOS, for example, it basically says now there are two places that are saying that they care about this object. And then you call retain again and it goes to 3. And then when you call release, then it goes back down to 2. And when it goes back down to 0, then it cleans it up, clears it out of memory. Is that more or less the way that it works?
Yep.
Yeah.
And yeah, so if you get it wrong, one of two things will happen. You either over-retain or you over-release. And the first problem is harder to debug because your app will still work, right? You're just keeping on to memory for a lot longer than you should, and that memory will never get cleaned up until your application gets killed. The other problem is if you over-release, it will crash right then and there because your objects go away when you still expect them to be there. And so your program crashes and then you fix it. So yeah. It's really, you know, it's easier to get it wrong where you over-retain.
And for people who are newer to programming, when you hold on to an object that you no longer need and you do this frequently enough, we call this a memory leak. And basically the concern there is that as you pile more and more stuff up into memory, eventually you will run out. And then when you try and allocate something else into memory and you don't have any more space for it, then whatever program is trying to allocate that may crash or hang or both.
Yeah. And so on the iOS, if your program needs memory, it will start, if the device is low on memory and your program needs memory, then it will tell other applications that we're receiving a memory warning and that they have a chance to release things that they're hanging on to that they could easily create again. So like if you were holding on to some kind of contents from a file on disk in memory as a dictionary or something, and then you got that memory warning, you could just release that object. And then next time vuted load gets called or whatever, you could just read it from disk again. So it gives you an opportunity to free up stuff in the case of memory pressure.
So do you write that kind of thing into your programs? Where if you get a request from another program that says, we're getting a memory warning, you tell it what kinds of things it can let go?
Yeah, so this used to be super important when the devices didn't have very much memory. And all the time, we'd get these memory warnings, and it would change the behavior of our application because... Well, either the program would crash because it just can't allocate enough memory, or we wouldn't do it correctly, right? So like if you release something that you expect to be around later. So, you know, a couple of years ago, this was of paramount importance. Nowadays, it's a little bit easier to be lazy and not release memory just because the devices have more of it.
Yeah, I try to do it with like, you know, temporary objects like images or even views that I can reload or whatever. But like Ben said, nowadays, you don't have to worry too much about it.
And it really influences your design. So if there's something that you have that's somewhat expensive to create, and you create that thing, let's say you create it in like a vuted load. So later on, if you remove it in a memory warning, you have to make sure that that thing gets created again. So extracting the initialization of that object somewhere else so that you can call it multiple times can be handy. But I think even better is to use lazy initialization. So you declare this object as a property, and then you override the getter of the property, and you check to see if your backing instance variable is nil first. And if it's nil, then you go ahead and create it and return it. Mm-hmm. And by doing that, anywhere in your program, like in the did receive memory warning block, you can just nil out those things, and then they'll get recreated next time they're accessed. So you don't have to worry about the view lifecycle or anything like that.
That's a handy trick.
Yeah, it works really well.
Now, is that something that most people do, or is that just a trick that you guys have kind of come to on your own?
That's a good question. I mean, we do it at on my team, but it's just because we're all talking about how to write software better, right? And we all share ideas. Mm-hmm. So I think that's in general pretty good design, though. Extract things, do lazy initialization. You know, well-factored Objective-C code kind of resembles well-factored Ruby code, in my opinion. So I do the same type of thing in Ruby, you know, when refactoring, just extract methods so that when you create something, it, you know, nil assigns it into a variable or whatever. It makes it really easy to extract known concepts of your code.
That makes sense. I kind of wanted to ask another question really quickly. And that was, I remember back in the bad old days when I was writing C in college, sometimes you would malloc something and then you would move through several different scopes and then it was hard to find a reference to the object in order to free it. Do you ever run into the same kind of thing with retain and release?
I mean, you always have a pointer to it, right? It's either, you know, an IVAR or it's a local variable or it's a property. It seems like you always have a reference to that object.
Yeah, the more I think about it, the more I realize that I probably just had poorly written my code, and I needed to basically free it at the last point that I had a reference to it.
Right.
I remember my old C days, and there were much more memory problems with free and malloc than there ever was with release and retain in Objective-C.
Yeah, I mean, one of the problems, like even with C, is you have a lot of functions that create stuff for you. Right. And so then when you're handed back the object, you have to own it. Right. And so having that malloc happen in one place and free happen in another seems very unbalanced.
Yes. Right.
So, you know, in Objective-C, the rules are if you alloc or init new or copy something. So if the method you're calling to create it starts with init new or copy, then you own the retain count and you're responsible for releasing it. But if you retrieve it through any other means, like the factory method I just mentioned, the lazy initialize property, that object does not belong to you and it is known to be auto-released, which I like as a pattern in general because it allows me to just call a method, you know, extract the creation of some stuff into a method and have that method returned, and I don't need to worry about releasing it. But to do that, I have to call auto-release just before returning from the method. And so what that does is it adds the object to the auto-release pool, and on the next clock cycle, it will drain the auto-release pool and release all the objects. So it's kind of like a temporary a temporary, say, you know, release this later, and the calling code has a chance to retain it again themselves if they want it to stay around. But usually you just use the object and continue on.
So these are kind of short-lived objects that you only need for, say, one iteration of your method or whatever?
Yeah, and if I needed it to stay around, then I just say retain. Or, you know, and more common these days is to use properties in your implementation file in the class continuation at the top. So it's a way to declare private properties. And if you mark the property as retain in pre-arc days and strong in arc days, then you don't have to worry about retaining it. You just set the pointer and it handles the memory management for you. And later on, you just have to set it to nil to release it.
So once you've fully released an object, does it immediately remove it from memory, or is there some kind of garbage collection on the back end that you just don't have any visibility into?
Yeah, I mean, you could watch this happen. You could set a breakpoint in dealloc and watch when it gets called. So as soon as your retain count goes to zero, meaning you've released the last reference to the object, dealloc gets called right then and there. So you have a lot more control over object allocation and deallocation takes time. And if you were to do this in a tight loop, you would start to notice it affecting performance. So if you just moved dealloc somewhere else, your last release somewhere else, you can actually see what that does to your memory profile and how it affects the CPU.
Oh, interesting.
So one of the ways you would see this happen, like in game development, since you have basically 16 milliseconds to completely do all updates in your game and redraw everything in order to finish and draw the scene so that the next time you draw it again, you're running at 60 frames per second. So you have, I think it's 16.7 milliseconds. So if allocating 10 or 20 or 100 objects takes some of that time, you know, you're going to really care about this performance. And you might not think that that's so important in business apps, except on the iPhone, when you're scrolling your table views, you can easily get 60 frames a second when scrolling that. And object allocation is really expensive, and you'll notice it hiccup as that happens. And so, you know, table view, they introduced the reuse queue. So you only create your cells once for each cell that is visible on the screen. And then they just go into a reuse queue when they go off screen. And the one that just comes on the screen, that's about to be appeared, gets dequeued from that list. And so then so you can see probably 12 rows at a time. You probably only have 13 total objects in that queue. And you can use that to speed through thousands of rows of content because you're just not doing that memory allocation and deallocation while it's trying to animate.
That makes sense. So what do you get from Arc then?
It's kind of the best of both worlds. I mean, you have automatic memory management and you have the performance.
What do you mean? Is it not doing the same thing that
I think you mean best of both worlds with respect to garbage collection and manual memory management, right?
Correct, right.
So we said that we don't have garbage collection on iOS.
So yeah, so what this does is I mentioned that there are some rules to retain and release. Like if I own the object, I have to release it. And if I don't own the object, I only retain it if I want it to stay around. And if I retain it, then I own it and I have to release it. And so all these rules became such strict rules that Apple eventually released a static analyzer that you can use. If you hit Command B to build an Xcode, you hit Command Shift B to build and analyze. And the analyzer will tell you where your memory leaks are. And it was tuned to be so that everything it tells you is actionable. Like it might miss a few edge cases here and there where it can't figure it out, but everything that it tells you, you can act on it and fix a memory leak. So it'll point you and say, hey, you allocated this object up here and you didn't release it down here. So you probably want release here, or you probably want auto release here. And because it could do that, it had the smarts to do that. They eventually just baked those smarts into the compiler so that when you compile, it just stitches in those retain, release, auto release where they're needed. And you don't really have to think about it. So, you know, I'll slap a huge caveat on there. It's really important that you know what it's doing for you under the hood because this is not garbage collection. So it's possible to introduce, it's still possible to introduce memory leaks and it's still possible to crash. You just have to understand what Arc's doing for you and then you just kind of don't need to write that code.
So if you find that Arc is doing the wrong thing, and causing you memory leaks and what have you, can you still call release yourself?
No. Yeah, that's a compiler warning. Those keywords are removed from the language. So I went through a process last year updating a large app from non-Arc to Arc, and it was kind of a pain. Actually, it was a gigantic pain because things like that, you can't just do it overnight. So we maintained a branch where you were slowly but surely converting things over, testing them. And we could turn Arc on a file-by-file basis using a compiler flag. And so once we got it all over, we could turn on Arc for the whole project. And once Arc is on for a file or the whole project, it will start. It will warn you if you call retain or release yourself. And if you implement dealloc, you cannot call super dealloc, right? So dealloc would just be a kind of like a template method that you would use to clean up stuff once your class is going away. But you don't need to call super.
Huh.
Where Arc can get a little bit messed up is it's not necessarily Arc's fault. It's just a fundamental problem with the way code can be structured, in which you get what's called retain cycles. So if you have a parent-child object, right? Let's just say you're following some good object-oriented practices, and you're taking this big controller, this big class, and you're just composing it into lots of smaller classes, right? Mm-hmm. And because I'm using the smaller classes in the parent class, and let's say I'm just delegating some responsibilities to another class, but their life cycles are still bound to each other. Like the child is going to live as long as the parent lives, and the once the parent goes away, the whole tree should go away. So if we do that and we have a reference from the parent to the child, which would be a strong pointer in Arc terms, that means that when you assign an object to that pointer, it will do the retain for you. If the child points back to the parent in a strong fashion also, then you have both objects pointing to each other. So if I'm doing hand motions that you obviously can't see, but so you have these things pointing to each other, right? You can do this with your fingers at home. So when are either of these going to go away? When either of their retain counts go to zero.
But they both have a retain on each other.
They'll never go to zero. And this happens quite often. And so you spot those areas where it happens and you say, oh, that pointer needs to be weak. So in this case, the child's pointer back to the parent needs to be weak so it does not retain the parent. And that allows, once the parent's last retain goes away, then he will get deallocated and he will release all of his objects, in which case the child will get released. This happens all the time with a delegate pattern, kind of like the UI table view delegate. If you look at the reference to that, it's a weak pointer. And the reason is your table view is bound to your object, right? It's your view controller or whatever. And you're probably also the delegate for that delegate and data source. So, you know, when you tap on something on the table view, it notifies its delegate that something happened. And so that delegate pattern is always a weak pointer because you always have some sort of parent-child relationship with that object. These things happen actually in such known areas that like you can immediately spot them once you know what's going on.
Yeah, that makes sense. Are there any other gotchas with Arc?
Yeah, there's a couple others. I was just talking on Twitter with a guy who's asking about RubyMotion and how RubyMotion deals with this. And, you know, it seems as if RubyMotion doesn't have to deal with this, but they actually do. It's just doing similar things under the hood. So one of the other gotchas I mentioned on Twitter is you have a block, and a block is just it's a closure. It's kind of like an anonymous method that can be invoked at any point in time later on. And because of that, those rules, every object that you use inside of the block has to be retained so that they stick around at the time of the block executing. So it's like the block is retaining the objects inside. And so you can run into a situation where you perform a method and it's going to call the block later when the method is completed. So some like maybe async network call. And if you invoke a method on self inside the block, it's going to retain self. So you have the block retaining the owning class. So it's again that parent-child relationship. And the way you break that retain is by creating a weak pointer version of self. Okay. And so that one is a bit confusing. It's done through the underscore underscore weak pointer qualifier. So basically you'd say under weak, weak self equals, like I usually call it weak self. And then I use the weak self pointer inside the block. So it's basically just creating a new pointer, pointing it to self with the underscore underscore weak qualifier, and then use the weak self pointer in the block. And that informs the block not to retain self.
So it's kind of like in JavaScript, because you have things that are closures, you make it close over something that isn't the this keyword, but it's something else that points to what you want to be able to reference.
In JavaScript, you can bind this to whatever, so it depends on the context in which you invoke that function. But in Objective-C, like, we're just retaining the object. So if that block is never going to be released because it's bound to the lifecycle of the class that it was created in. A typical example of that is notifications. You can handle a notification and pass in a block. And you typically want to do that. And then where do you release your notifications? Well, like in the dialloc or in the view.unload or something. So basically the notification handler, which is a block, is bound to the lifecycle of the view because it's going to stick around for the whole time. So if you're capturing self inside the block, you're going to retain the parent class, and then you have that parent child strong pointer retain cycle problem.
Right.
So if you add the weak self pointer, which is kind of let's be honest, it kind of sucks that you have to do this, but it's a small price to pay for what Rod was just saying is like the best of both worlds. There is one last curveball to this, which I don't know if this is coming across well describing it, but. So we have declared this variable as weak so that it's not retained inside the block. But then we're kind of in a dangerous state. Like when the block is executing, if that view controller class did get deallocated while the block is executing, then our accessing self at that point could crash.
Yeah.
So what people do when they've finally found these problems out and they're like, okay, I know what to do. They create a weak pointer outside the block. And then inside the block, they create a strong pointer. And then by the time the block is done executing, it will release its retain on that.
So they just create a strong pointer without actually... Wait.
Inside the block. So a weak pointer outside the block, you use it inside the block to create a strong pointer, which does the retain. And then you do your code and strong pointer gets released.
The strong pointer gets released when the block is done executing.
Yes.
Because it's then... popped off of the stack and the strong pointer goes out of scope, so it's released.
Yep, exactly. So it's this unfortunate aspect of dealing with ARC and manual memory management, but the benefit is you get really fast, consistent code, and you don't have to worry about the weird performance characteristics of a garbage collector.
Yeah, and the other thing is you don't have to remember to release or retain every time either.
Right.
Interesting.
So, Rod, do you want to talk about the dealing with Core Foundation?
Yeah, I can talk a little bit about that. So, Core Foundation is the C-level API to some of the frameworks that Apple has that Cocoa is built on top of. And so it's a C-based API. So they've implemented some rules that are very similar to Cocoa. So you have you typically have a function that will create a object or data structure that ends with copy or create. And then to release that, you call like a CF release. And also if you want to retain that, somebody else wants to retain it, they call CF retain on the pointer that was returned by that create or copy function. So, and then you have you have what we call toll-free bridging, which is some objects, core foundation objects, such as arrays or strings or dictionaries, you can directly cast to the Cocoa equivalent. So a core foundation string, CF string, can be cast to an NS string. So with ARC, you run into an issue. Who owns that object when you transfer the pointer?
When you transfer the pointer, meaning you cast it from a CF string to an NS string?
Right, when you do a toll-free bridge. So with Core Foundation, you basically have to do the retain release management of memory yourself. But
so there is no ARC for the Core Foundation stuff?
Correct.
Okay.
But you can transfer it to do the toll-free bridging and transfer it to a Cocoa pointer. So for example, and so there's these cast modifiers, underscore underscore bridge says when you do this cast, don't transfer the ownership. So you you still have to manage that memory yourself. Core Foundation owns it. You have to release it, whatever, when you're done. Then there's also __bridge_retain. And that transfers, that typically is when you're going from the other way, from Cocoa to Core Foundation. So that transfers the ownership to Core Foundation. And then you have to manage the memory yourself. Or, like we were originally talking about, you're going from a Core Foundation function object to a Cocoa object. You use __bridge transfer, and that will transfer that Core Foundation object to Arc, and then Arc will manage it from there. Now, typically when you're doing this, you'll get compiler warnings, and Xcode will pop up a thing telling you how it can fix it, and it'll suggest one of these keywords or cast modifiers. Did I get everything, Ben? I think I did.
Yep. Yeah, that covers it.
That's interesting. I think I forget fairly often that Objective-C is basically C with a bunch of extensions on top of it.
Yeah, the other thing is Xcode's really good about telling you, hey, I think you want this here, or at least gives you two choices, and you get what's called like a little fix-it window, and you just click on it and says, do you want a bridge retain or bridge transfer? Or sorry, is that right? Anyway, it gives you the options, and you're like, and then you say, what do those mean? You go look up the docs, and it tells you. So it's not like you're going to ship an app and not know you're having to deal with this problem. Xcode will tell you, you have to pick one, and you pick the most appropriate one. That said, I mean, these areas are just kind of fringe cases. Like, you see them and you notice these patterns and whatever, but 99% of the time, you're just using Arc in the same way you'd use it and use a language like Ruby or Java or C#. You just write methods that return objects, they get auto-released, or you write methods that create objects and use them, and those get released at the appropriate time, so...
Yeah, that makes sense. So in Xcode, my understanding is that by default on new projects, Arc is enabled, but you can go in and you can uncheck it and turn it off.
Yes. And that really, there's no reason not to use it. If you are working on a newer project, then you should use it. I just think that, you know, there's those age old debates like, should I learn X when there's this higher level thing? I definitely think you should learn how to do manual memory management. Like, just go through one or two tutorials and learn the rules. And from that point on, you can just use Arc and be happy that you didn't have to suffer through these days of manual memory management.
Yeah.
Also really good to talk about, since we're dealing with memory, is that Instruments is a fantastic tool for finding leaks in your program. So I mentioned earlier, yeah. So if you're in Xcode, you just type Command-I, which will profile your app with Instruments. And you can choose various types of tools in here. I'm going to run it so I can tell you what they are. It's under the product menu, product profile. And this will launch your app inside of Instruments. And then you get to choose one of these various templates. And one of them is called Leaks. And if you run your app with the Leaks instrument, it launches the simulator. And it tells you what objects are getting allocated and how many megabytes and that sort of thing. And then you can sort of poke around your application by pushing buttons, which obviously creates objects and releases objects and all kinds of things. Go to different view controllers, back out of them. And at any point in time, if you have a leak, it will spike and it will tell you what the leak is. And I just did this on an app I'm working on and found the leak.
Nice.
So I can go to it and it tells me exactly what the object it was that got leaked. It tells me the memory address, and then you can click on it and it'll tell you the life cycle of what happened. And so, looks like I need to dig into this particular one, but it's a really good tool and it's super easy to use. And since it's built into Xcode, you should definitely take a look and see if you're leaking memory.
Another useful tool is NSZombie enabled, which is zombies are dead objects. They've been released, but you're still trying to send a message to them. So that will lead to crashes. So there is a environment variable called NSZombieEnabled that you can, in Xcode, you can set up the arguments when you run your app, and it'll set that to true. And then it keeps track of all your objects. And if you send a message to a zombie, it'll tell you about it.
Oh, that's interesting. Now, this is when you run it in the simulator on Xcode?
Yeah, or on your device.
Oh, you can do that too?
Yes.
Yeah. So. Yeah. You can do that. Just make sure that, that you turn it off when you not want to use it, because what it does is when an object is deallocated, instead of actually releasing it, it hangs around and it's in a known location that just throws exceptions saying, hey, somebody tried to call me and here's the stack trace, just so that you can catch it right then and there. But it also prevents you from ever detecting leaks because none of the objects are getting released. So instruments will tell you that you can't actually detect leaks with zombies enabled. So it's just a setting you can turn on and off.
Right, but it does really slow your program down, so you don't want to keep it in there.
Right. But it seems like one's a good way of detecting leaks, and the other's a good way of detecting when you've over-released and your app is blowing up because you're trying to talk to something that's no longer there, no longer should be there.
Right.
So another thing, since we use a lot of open source libraries and we bring in third-party code and that sort of stuff in our apps, during this transition of Arc to non-Arc to Arc, some of the libraries out there were like, okay, we're finally making the transition. We are now only using Arc. And for people who pull this stuff in manually, it's kind of a pain because you have to change the compiler flags for each file if it doesn't match your project setting. So if you don't use Arc and this library you want to use does use Arc, then you have to do that. What's cool about this system called CocoaPods, which we use for pulling in third-party dependencies, is that the CocoaPod itself declares whether or not the file uses Arc or the project, and so it will automatically add those flags for you when you include it in your project.
Oh, very nice. If you're pulling them in by hand instead of using CocoaPods, is that really the only way to do it, is to set the compile flags per file?
Yeah, if they don't match your setting, yep. I think there's something that I saw in one of these older projects where somebody was trying to get around it by providing one library that worked in both environments, and you had to do some sort of compiler define, and it would redefine release to do nothing. Stuff like that is weird. It just doesn't seem like a good solution, you know?
Yeah, I can definitely see that. You know, changing something, especially a keyword that's defined for the language. Yeah, I can see where that might cause a problem if you're calling it somewhere else expecting it to do something.
One of the things we didn't mention is the auto release pool keyword that's for Arc, the new keyword they introduced. Uh-huh. So in the old retain release method, there was an auto release method that we talked about. Well, in Arc, you're not allowed to do that. However, so if you do have a tight loop or you're allocating a lot of objects and you want to free them up sooner than that, you can use this auto release block kind of. So you say auto release, start bracket, put your code, close bracket, and then you have an auto release pool in that section of code.
Huh, that's interesting. And so it just auto releases anything that's allocated inside of that block?
Yep. Yeah, it does that. So I don't think I've ever really had to use this outside of when you used to have to create your own threads. So like an auto-release pool, there's one given to you. You can look in your main.m and you'll see it. And basically, it just means on the next run loop, it will clean up all those things. So like once you to get in that spot. So if you're in a tight loop, like Rod was saying, if you created thousands of objects and they were all auto-released and you're looping over that, creating many more thousands of objects, you probably want to start freeing those things up incrementally rather than all at the end.
Uh-huh.
So but again, it's auto release is such a tiny performance hit that I don't know how relevant it is anymore to need to use auto release pools yourself. I mean, what do you think, Rod? Do you ever use that anymore?
Not anymore. I remember in the old way I had to use it a couple of times, but yeah, it's like when you're allocating a ton of objects and it's affecting a performance, then you might want to look at it.
Yeah, I mean, it used to be when we needed to do multi-threaded code, you would actually say, you know, perform the selector in background, which would create a thread and call a method on it. And in that method, since you're running on a background thread, you couldn't create any objects. It would say you need a new auto-release pool on this thread. And so you'd have to create an NS auto-release pool and then drain it at the very end.
Right.
And now that code is deprecated in favor of this this nice @auto-release pool block.
All right. Cool. Well, this is really interesting. I got a whole lot more out of that than than I thought I might get. Are there any other things that we need to talk about with memory management?
Do we need to talk about the properties and how you specify them?
Oh yeah, we didn't talk about what ARC brings for weak pointers either.
Go ahead.
Right.
Okay. So before ARC, you had retain and assign properties. So if you had something that was an object, you would generally use retain if you wanted it to be retained. Or if you had like an integer or a float or a bool, you would use assign. And in that third case where you have a delegate, where you do not want to retain the pointer back to the parent, you would use assign there as well, so that no retain would happen. And the problem with that is once that object that you're pointing to goes away, the memory is no man's land. It could be some other object. So you would get these weird errors like, hey, there is no method, you know, start up the Ferrari on NS string. And you'd be like, yeah, that's really weird. Why is it looking for that method on an NS string? And that's because some other object is now occupying that memory. Or more common, it just crashes because that memory is just garbage. So with ARC, you now have a pointer qualifier on all these properties. You have strong, weak, and unsafe, unretained. So unsafe, unretained is the same as pointing to an object with assigned semantics. So no retain happens, and if the object goes away, you're in danger. Right. Weak is the same thing, except when the object gets deallocated that you're pointing to, that pointer becomes zeroed out, which effectively makes it nil, which means anything you call on it becomes a no op, okay. Which is a lot safer than crashing. So, and you know, it's a lot of people, you know, I interview a lot of people and I always ask that question, you know, like what is a weak pointer? And a lot of people just think it's a sign in ARC days, but, it's really a zeroing weak pointer, which is a really handy thing to have. And that was introduced in 4.2, I think. So if you had an app that was using 4.0, you couldn't use it. But I think as a 4.2 and above, it's been around.
Okay. And then a strong pointer is the retain, and we've talked about all of that stuff.
Yep.
There's also variable qualifiers that go around along with that if you don't want to declare a property. Underscore, underscore weak, underscore, underscore strong, underscore, underscore unsafe retained.
So it's unsafe unretained, right?
Unsafe unretained, right. And I've run into a couple bugs lately with ARC on Lion, and it seems like certain, like especially NS Windows, you can't have a weak reference, a weak property reference to a window. For some reason, it can't create the weak reference. And I had on Lion, only on Lion, and so I had to use the assign property type.
Cool. Is that, were you using a nib?
They were delegates, so I was using a weak delegate, and for some reason, it couldn't create it. It would cause a crash. And I had to switch it to assign.
Yeah, I remember when I was reading the first book on Cocoa development, it was talking about whether or not you should, when declaring outlets for use in Interface Builder, so you could say have a reference to a button on your user interface, and you would, you know, control drag from the button over to your code, and you would say, okay, connect to that with my button property. And on iOS, you would have a situation where you could declare those as assign or weak because the nib itself was retaining the objects. But on the Mac, those would cause the objects to get released immediately. So you had to use strong. So I remember the advice used to be a couple of years ago, just use strong because you have more consistent code across Mac and iOS. And now I've seen that they have changed the template. So when you just create an outlet using Xcode and the assistant editor, it will create a weak pointer for you. And I assume it's the same on the Mac now, right?
Well, I think you might have gotten that backwards, or else, because when I was doing the Mac programming, you set your outlets, and you don't have to retain or release the views in the window, for example. Say you have a pointer to a window, because all you have to do is have a pointer to the window, and the window's retaining all those views and everything. And then when iOS came out, there was all these strong references to your views, and you had to manage that. And then when ARC came out, they switched it so that you can use weak outlets. That's what I've seen lately.
Right. Yeah, that's what I said. I think I said that anyway.
Okay.
Listen to what I meant, not what I said.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we're just about at the end of our time. Are there any other aspects of memory management that we ought to talk about before we wrap this up?
I don't know. It's just not as scary as I thought it would be when I first got into it. So it's just kind of like, you know, the guy in the Matrix, he's just like, now if I see blonde, brunette, redhead, it's kind of like you can spot the memory leaks pretty easily because it just looks wrong.
Yeah.
You know,
it sounds like there are good tools to help you identify them as well. So,
yeah.
Yeah. And I remember doing Java, and even though it had garbage collection, we ran into all kinds of memory problems and memory leaks, and it wasn't very performant. And then when I went over to Objective-C, everything just seemed to work a little bit better. Now, that probably could be because it's compiled language, but I think the memory management was part of that performance as well.
You ready for the email you're going to get on that comment?
I was going to point out that Java is compiled and then it's interpreted on the JVM.
Right.
Anyway. All right. Well, let's go ahead and get into the picks. Rod, do you want to start us off?
I will pick a new service that came out from the CocoaBots guys, cocodocs.org, which you can look up the docs for any open source project you're thinking in one place. So it looks pretty interesting. And then for my second pick, I'm going to pick my own website, getnumerology.com. It's my first Rails app that I just released to generate numerology reports.
Awesome. Ben, what are your picks?
Okay, so a lot of people come up to me at conferences and they're like, what was that plugin you're using in Xcode? Xcode has a really horrible plugin system, but that said, people do make plugins for Xcode. The first one I use is Xvim, and I'll paste all the links here so you can add them in the show notes. So Xvim gives me Vim key bindings in Xcode. So I have insert mode, command mode, and I can do all the motion keys and things like that. It occasionally causes Xcode to crash, but not enough to make me stop using it. That's maybe like one time a week or something. But I just find that since I use Vim for my Ruby work, that it's nice to just jump in and have the same kind of keystrokes everywhere. The next one is called OM ColorSense. And OM ColorSense, basically, if I start typing UI color, red color, and hit the close square bracket, it puts a little tab, like a rounded rectangle tab, on the top of that line of code with the red color in it. And if you click on it, it brings up the standard OS X color picker, and you can change the color, and it changes your typed code to be UI color, color with red, blue, green, alpha. And so you can tweak that color however much you want, and you can even change alpha value and everything, which is pretty awesome. So if you just need to kind of throw something together and you want a color, and obviously you don't want to use red, but you might want to darken it up a little bit, you can just use the color picker and it changes your code for you. And the last plugin I use is called KS Image Named. And that one is kind of in similar vein. If I type UI image named, it will bring a pop-up with all of the images in my project. And I can just use the arrow keys to select one and hit enter, and it will fill it in for me. And on my project, I have hundreds of assets. So it's nice to be able to have some of them autocomplete.
Nice. All right. So my picks, the first pick I'm going to pick is rechargeable batteries. I know that's not an iPhone programming deal, but it's really, really nice for the things that I have. I have a Bluetooth keyboard and the Magic Trackpad, and it's really nice just to be able to swap them out and then not have to go buy batteries every so often. So that's one pick. The other pick that I have is, I'm trying to remember what this is called. It's called Smart Finder, I think. It is, it kind of drops in and replaces Finder, but it gives you, in your Finder window, it gives you tabs. You can also, go into a mode where you have two folders side by side, so you can just drag them across back and forth. And, I really, really like this thing. It just makes things a whole lot easier for, what I do and when I need to move files around on my machine. So those are my picks. I'll put links in the show notes. And, it looks like next week, we're talking about what we're going to talk about next week. So stay tuned, and we'll see you all then.